Welcome to the Gastric Health Show, where we help you achieve the happiest and healthiest version of yourself by motivating you to eat, move, sleep, and think better.
Welcome to the Gastric Health Show. My name is Dawn Boxall, and I am excited to share with you today an interview with Dina Norton, and we are going to be discussing how stress drives emotional eating. And I am super excited to share this topic with you, and she gives tons of nuggets, so listen in. Dina, thank you so much for joining us today for our podcast. Now, Dina, this is our second interview together, and I so appreciate that. But in case the audience has not heard the sabotaging effects of stress, and that was on our episode 43. So if you haven't checked that out, please do so. I think you'll learn lots of valuable information that can kind of help you if you are feeling stuck in your health. But first off, in case the audience is not aware of anything about you, Dina, I would love for you to share.
Yeah, well, I went through the very traditional educational route, as I think you did too. So I got my bachelor's and my master's in nutrition mm-hmm. and worked in an outpatient clinic at MD Anderson here in Houston. So definitely square in the middle of the traditional medical community.
Yeah.
I was always interested in more natural things. I was kind of like that girl on staff who was into herbs and, you know, all of that, but still very much within the four walls of traditional medicine.
Right.
And then when I went through some health challenges of my own, I went to where I knew to go. I read all the peer-reviewed literature I could think to read. I went to doctors and specialists, and I was having an HPA axis dysfunction, big health crash. It was, I built this house of cards over years not knowing it with my diet and some other things, and it was starting to layer symptoms. My hormones, headaches, fatigue, just hair falling out, all kinds of crazy stuff, and I was really worried. And so I couldn't get answers from anyone. They did run all their tests. They were very nice. I mean, I have nothing against them. But no one could tell me why it was happening. The word menopause was thrown out as not. I'm like, I'm 34. Like this
is not
something's
it.
Going on. Yeah. You know, the cardiologist ran all his tests. He's like, I can give you a beta blocker. No, I want to know why I have heart palpitations at 34 as a healthy person.
Right.
So that really pushed me to look outside the bounds of what I had known. And I went and saw a holistic practitioner, and they were like, didn't phase them at all. They were like, this is what's going on in your body, and this is why, and we need to do this. Everything I did worked, step by step.
Yep.
Everything worked. I got better and better and better. I felt dramatically better in just a few months. And, you know, it took me a year and a half or two to feel like myself again.
Yeah.
I was an older version of myself at that point, but, you know, I did get past it, and it opened my eyes to this approach of, like, understanding physiologically why, which is what I wanted all along.
Right.
And I, you know, through that course realized there's actually a lot of legitimate peer-reviewed literature, just doesn't all happen to be placebo-controlled, randomized clinical trials, what we're trained in nutrition and medicine to demand as evidence. If we want to try anything, it better have all those studies. Yep. So there's a lot of preliminary data, small human studies, some randomized controlled trials for a lot of this stuff. There's legitimate science behind a lot of it. It's just not far enough along to have made it into accepted medicine, which I can't remember now, but I've read a study before where they looked at how long it takes a drug from the time, or a drug or a theory, like a principle, basically, either a treatment or a principle and accepted knowledge in medicine, how long it takes it from being proven to being, like, implemented.
Yeah.
And it was, like,
years.
It was crazy.
Yep.
So I want to be cutting edge. Like, I want to know, I want to be scientifically sound, but I want to be on the edge of what's new and what's proven.
Yep.
But I don't want to wait 15 years to give people help. I don't want to wait for whoever to stamp it with their approval stamp. Yes. So I really started incorporating a lot of this, obviously, into my own life. But then at that point, I didn't have a practice. I was, you know, at home with a family, and I had a little, you know, a website, and it was a food blog, and I was happy. But I started passionately telling everyone I knew about this stuff because it worked. And so at that point, my entrepreneurial husband was like, hey, let's actually charge people. So that's what I've been doing for the last several years and, you know, learning every day. I'm in a functional medicine certification program now, but, you know, just reading and learning and seeing clients taught me so much over the past several years. So love what I do, love helping people. And it's so fun, like you were saying, to take people who just haven't been helped in this way and go and fill in those knowledge gaps to help them understand their body, but give them solutions, tools in their hands that really, really work.
Right.
Exciting.
I want to kind of take the same theme of stress, but then kind of talk about stress eating and cravings and how stress really does make us eat things and do things that we don't want to do. We know we shouldn't be eating these things, but here we are. We're in the drive-through, we're in the pantry, we're choosing those foods again when we told ourselves we weren't going to do it. So how can you maybe explain how stress really drives us to make those poor food choices or continually make those poor food choices?
Yeah, well, there are a few aspects, I think. One is the most obvious that we all are familiar with from experience and what makes sense, right, is our ingrained behaviors, our relationship with food.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I go for fill in the blank comfort or stress relief or whatever.
Yeah.
And that emotionally driven eating, you know, and I think the real answer for that is time out, slow the train down, ask why.
Yeah.
Why am I walking to the kitchen? Why am I choosing the ice cream over the carrot? Why? Until you get to the root of it, which is that scary box that no one wants to open where you really got to deal with some junk. But that's the solution to that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you got to figure out why you turn to food for this emotion versus turning to something more appropriate.
Yeah.
But the other contributors, you know, related to stress are, like we mentioned, blood sugar.
Yeah.
So blood sugar lows will cause us physiologically to crave carbohydrates. And we're not talking about like brown rice, apple. We're talking about the good stuff. You know, if you let your blood sugar tank, you are going to get shaky, hangry, give me all the ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to feel like that. And it's not because you're weak or because, you know, you have a problem and you're not strong enough to resist ice cream. It's because your blood sugar went too low.
Yeah.
So, you know, fix that. Don't let it get that low.
Exactly.
Even ways that we talked about before. So blood sugar can for sure drive cravings and quote unquote bad food choices. Another one is hormones. Hormones of various kinds. Cortisol, we talked about a little bit as a stress hormone. Again, it too will cause us to seek carbs usually, but comfort foods. It senses the stress and it wants us to get back on level ground with our blood sugar, with our neurotransmitters. It wants us to be in a place of stability. So it will often prompt cravings for sugary foods, or in some people who've had kind of chronic cortisol issues, maybe they have lower cortisol, they might tend to crave salty foods a lot, a lot. Like I've heard people of just like, they literally feel like it would taste good to put a little salt on their finger and lick it. Whoa, let's see what your sodium levels are. Oh, look, they're at the bottom end of the range. I bet we should do some electrolyte supplementation, you know, because their cortisol is depleting, because cortisol does help regulate electrolytes as well as other things. So cortisol is one way. Leptin is another way, which maybe your crowd is familiar with. I know that's a big topic, maybe in this arena. So leptin resistance can literally make it hard to stop eating. You know, it's not just that you can't say no, it's that there are chemicals in your body turning off your signal of fullness and satiety. So you'll want to keep going because the signaling is off, not because you're a bad person.
Right.
Estrogen can also drive cravings, specifically it seems to always be carb craving too when it drops. And so sometimes women will have more cravings kind of right before their cycle as estrogen is dropping or after menopause, or if they've been through a long season of stress and burnout and their estrogen production is turned down, they might feel more cravey. But other things beyond hormones would be some yeast, like yeast overgrowth in the gut or in other parts of the body, which often is seeded from the gut, I find can drive cravings. And again, it's always for sugar. It's always like I literally have had a child who was young, like in a healthy home, and would literally say, like, after every meal throughout the day, I need something sweet. You know, and it wasn't, it didn't match up. Like, he hadn't been trained to always be eating sugary things. It was the yeast. So, you know, when we did a stool test, there was big time candida overgrowth. There were definitely other issues going on, but fixing those went away.
Yes.
You know, so sometimes cravings really are coming from a physiological place. It's correct. Not just because you can't be strong enough to overcome it.
Right.
So these are things to consider. And then we have the whole category of neurotransmitters. So we think of neurotransmitters as these brain messengers, things like serotonin and dopamine, epinephrine is one, GABA. So these are chemicals set off in the body, mostly made in the gut, interestingly, but very active in the brain, and they regulate mood. So a lot of serotonin is like uppers and downs. GABA is a calm down chemical when you're anxious. But all of these can interact with cravings as well. So actually, if someone has low serotonin, sometimes low glutamine, definitely low GABA, these things can trigger cravings. And so sometimes we'll bring in a supplement of an amino acid or the neurotransmitter itself to kind of top off that tank, so to speak, and take the edge off of cravings while we work on some other issues at the same time. There are lots of things in the body that drive us to eat, you know, and I hope that's a hopeful thing for people who have legitimately struggled with food relationship and eating behaviors for a long time. That's a big deal and you need to address it.
Yeah.
But it's very, very possible that there are other factors at play making it harder for you to overcome those things. And the good news is if you find those, address them correctly, it will make it so much easier to then overcome those food relationship behaviors.
I always like using the example when I'm trying to explain like the physiology piece, you know, the biochemistry that's happening that we have no awareness of really, other than the symptoms and experiences we feel on the outside. But just like a person who their iron is so low that they can't not eat ice. They are going to eat cups and cups of ice until they just, that number is resolved. So, and it's very interesting, all of them, if they end up needing like an iron infusion that day, they're like, oh, I'm done with ice. I don't need it anymore. They fixed that biochemical problem and that craving went away. They didn't need it. Same thing like what you're saying. If you hone in and you figure out what is it that is driving me to crave all these things, kind of like the child with the candida, no self-control is going to change it.
Right. And then that, I think, feeds back to that, you know, emotional food relationship. We all have an emotional relationship with food. That's just life, you know.
Yep.
We all occasionally will eat emotionally. I don't think that's like pathologic or anything.
Yeah.
But we can start to feel so defeated and so down about ourselves because these physiological things aren't known or aren't being addressed that it actually perpetuates what little bit of emotional eating there was and kind of can make it a huge problem because we put all that weight on ourselves, you know. So I think it's important to kind of look at all, look at your emotional triggers, ask the questions why, do the deep work, but maybe scan and see if there are any of these other things going on as well.
Yeah, agreed. That whole biochemistry piece is really a lot. Yes, your relationship and everything with food, that does play a role, but I really feel like, especially with our weight loss surgery patients, that is an area that they have never explored. They have never really considered because conventionally that has never been addressed. And so now it's like, okay, you open your eyes to see that, hey, there are some things that I could really focus on and maybe change, and I have control of changing it. And then it could really make a difference with how you feel and your ability to manage those cravings and not binge eat on something that
you always have.
Right, right. I agree.
Awesome. So tell us all about what you have to offer and how to get in touch with you if they would like to work with you.
Sure. Yeah, so I have a virtual practice called Back to the Book Nutrition. My website is backtothebooknutrition.com. From any page on the website, you can schedule a free 10-minute discovery call. So we can hop on the phone, you can share a little more about your symptoms, what you're struggling with. And I'll tell you if I think I'm a good fit for you and share more about my services. So that's the first step for anybody who's interested, kind of a free no commitment call. And I'd love to do that for anyone who's interested. I also hang out on social media, mostly on Instagram. Some of that gets over onto Facebook, but mostly I'm on Instagram and my handle there is Back to the Book Nutrition.
Awesome. Yay. So that's exciting that people have a way to get in touch with you and learn more even on your website. I know you have other things available that they can just learn from. So
yeah,
I think that's great.
Lots and lots of articles on the site and recipes.
We all love recipes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dina. I have enjoyed our talk and I'm excited to share it with everybody. And hopefully we'll have you again sometime.